Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Needless to say, the beast was stunned. A whip crack went his rumpet tail, and the beast was done. He asked us, "Be you angels?" And we said, "Nay, we are but men." Rock.
And we are all warmed up and ready to fly. John Ward, how you doing?
Well, I wouldn't say I was exactly warmed up. I would say I was lukewarm. It's rather damp and cold here this morning on the banks of the River Nile.
You know, you don't expect that from the River Nile. You think the River Nile, you think it's hot, it's arid. But, of course, it's 4 o'clock in the morning there. So the sun isn't up yet. And I'm so sorry for you that it's damp and below 70 degrees somewhere. You know what happened to us today?
After snow?
2 weeks of 50, 60, and almost 70 degrees the other day, we had a little snow in the air today. They're predicting 2 inches of snow in the city tonight.
We're actually in a mini heat wave. We're meant to reach 38 degrees by Friday.
Celsius, right?
Of course.
So you're talking like 120 degrees or something like that. Nice.
Yeah.
Bounce. Nice. That's Fahrenheit for our American listeners. Yes, and you know this wild, weird weather we've had an awfully. Yes, and Jeff Daugherty sitting over in our chat room, who has his show, The Christian Whistleblower, every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time here on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network. Jeff says over in the chat room that he's so sorry to hear about our snow from down there in sunny, warm Florida. So, well, you know what?
Jeff.
We get you got sinkholes, Jeff, so there you go.
Don't forget, Jeffrey does have the John Ward Bible Appreciation Study Group Society.
He does indeed. He does indeed. I am a banner member. He's just waiting for my decoder ring and my lapel pin. And a year from now, I get the 1 year medal if I last that long.
If you last and you're not taken over or possessed by a demon.
Yes. What I'm waiting for to come out on the market is that John Ward official Bible that you're putting together. You know how Jefferson had his Bible and he cut out everything out of it that he felt wasn't appropriate and wasn't real or whatever it was. I don't know enough about the Jefferson Bible, but the John Ward Bible, that'd be a lot like a turn to page 287.
Actually, it'd be more like it's not more like a book, it's more like a pamphlet, I suppose. It'd be like a double-sided A4, really.
Well, no, John, just put it in easy-to-read, large type, and we'll make it a 200-page book.
You're so nasty.
Then old guys like Jeff Daugherty won't have to put on their readers. So, moving on.
Before we move on, I did like that picture he put up. He looked like a biker of some sorts, but there was something missing. But he had his long hair, he had his bandana on, his colored sunglasses. You know, he did look like a formidable person to deal with.
You know, he did. He looked just like a biker, only he was missing the bike and the hot chick in pardon me if I say this, the assless leather chaps riding on the back.
But they similar to necropants.
Well, you know, necropants are a completely different thing. Thank goodness Mom isn't in the chat room to chide us for mentioning necropants. And folks, if you aren't familiar with what necropants are by now listening to this broadcast, it's something that came up originally on this broadcast with our – we had a guest on, Jason Miller, who was talking about sexual magic. And the topic of necropants came up, and it spilled over into the Situation Room, and it became almost every show we did, there was some mention of necropants. And Risa Scranton, we like to call her Mom, chided us heavily.
It had more of a cult following now, I would say, headed by our imperator, Jeff Daugherty and his biker outfit.
Yes. So, folks, if you want to join the Jeff Daugherty's John Ward Bible Study Hour group, just go over to Jeff Daugherty's page. It's ApostlePaulAntichrist.com, and you can learn all about it.
Yes, it just rolls off the tongue with you, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Nothing at all like your fishing match last weekend. So, in honor of our guest that's coming up, I thought this would be a nice preamble to our guest to talk tonight a bit about things that ail you. Now, Obama ails me, but this is not the kind of thing that can be cured with medication. So, or probably she's going to talk about. Or what?
You ail me.
I ail you, yes. That's when I hand you a full pint and I see her. I've ailed you. But no, seriously, just a few minutes before this program, I don't think a lot of people know this about me. I've got diabetes, and I'm completely frustrated with the fact that I have to take medication. And the older I get, they've added some kind of cholesterol medication. I said, well, can't I just cure that by eating right? They said, well, maybe. You just might have a cholesterol problem. And then they also tacked in there a blood pressure thing because I'm now borderline high blood pressure. And I said, well, can't all these things just be fixed without having to take meds? And they said, well, that's an awful lot of work, so we think we should just take the meds. And so, I've been on meds for several years now. I was diagnosed originally 12 years ago with type 2 diabetes. And that's just from living that free, free loving, free eating lifestyle all my life. And
I'm gonna ask you a serious question here.
Yeah.
What kind of motivates you to go and see a doctor when you know in the States? And I think this is the same all the world around now. But more, you hear more about it in the States, that you know that he's just going to pile on the meds and get you to take more tablets, have more tests and so forth, and walk around as a chingling pharmacy. I personally haven't seen a doctor now in over 15 years.
And I'm healthy as ever.
I think, to be able to see a doctor, it's so easy to see a doctor over here in the United States. If you've got something wrong, you can just walk right in. My doc knows me by first name. He saw me at the St. Patty. No. It was the 4th of July parade this last summer on the street. And he goes, hey, Scotty. And it was out of place. And at first I was like, who is that? Oh, that's my doctor. I've never seen him in a pair of, Madras shorts before. So, but I go to see the doctor when I have things that are starting to bug me. For instance, and you know me oh too well, there are things that bother me. I get this ache and pain, or this hurts, or my back hurts, or something. And I didn't even like to take aspirin when I had a headache. I thought if I can just work it through, I'm going to be fine. And so when I tend to go to see the doc is when something's really bothering me. And I have a broken bone in my lower back that I've had there since the early 1980s. And it was my very brief stint in the United States Marine Corps when they discovered that. And I was medically discharged. And I'm still a vet, but I never did anything in the Marine Corps. And I've had this. And they said, you're fine. Just keep exercising. You'll be good. It won't affect you until maybe you get a little older. And I'm thinking at, 22 years old, you're thinking, oh, when I'm elderly, okay, well, I got a long time. Well, now here we sit about 32 years later, and you know so well, John, it hit me last year. And I went into my doc, and the only reason I went into the doc, because it woke me up at 3 in the morning, my right leg was numb, and there was pain here and pain there. And I thought, I'm dying. I'm having a stroke. And he said, no, it's just your back. And when I tell them all the little pains, and they go, well, now what about this pain over here? I get this pain here, and it just kills me. And he says, he just sits back, and he kind of chuckles. And I go, what are you laughing about? And he said, you're just getting old. I said, Doc, that is not what I wanted to hear. Jeff Dougherty has declared it. It's the sin in my life.
Well, I would agree. But you see, why don't you just change your lifestyle? And I talk from experience here, because as I say, I haven't seen a doctor in 15 years.
Right.
If I'm in pain, and I've got, like you know, you too well, I've had a pain in my lower abdomen, and I had that for a couple of months. I had it when I was stateside during the Paradigm Symposium. I came back and I had it still in Sweden, and then came over to Egypt for the autumn season last year. And as soon as I came to Egypt, because of our lifestyle changes and our eating habits change and everything else, it stopped. And I went back to Sweden and it came back again. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. There must be something I'm either eating or drinking or something I'm not doing that I do in Egypt that is bringing on this pain. So I basically cut down all my foods and just started from the basics, started from water, cut back on my coffee, even though I must admit that did kill me a little bit, but I cut back on my coffee. I took a little bit more exercise instead of just sitting at that desk all day in the cabin in Sweden typing away. And that didn't make any change. Now, come back here to Egypt again now, and I haven't had the pain. It's gone completely.
So I think it is Western civilization.
I think there's something either in the water or there is something I'm eating, either a synthetic food of some kind, that is bringing that on. I even thought about having that I may be suffering from a minor acute kidney stone or something of that nature, because I drink a lot more water, of course, when I'm over here in the sun than back home in Sweden. So it could be a kidney complaint. So
John, it could be the sin in your life.
It's not the sin. I am sinless.
Oh, there it is.
I absolve myself.
There's nothing more boring than to sit and hear somebody else's medical problems. But I was saying I led off with this because our guest is going to have something to do with this. Don't let your eyes glass over. We're not going to be talking about medical problems. We're going to be talking with Robbie Holz is her name, H-O-L-Z, and she is very well known for what she does, and she has worked with the Aboriginals in Australia for many years about their inner healing. Now, the way I glean what she does, she is not one of those gurus, you know, who want to, you know, it is all about the inner peace that comes within you, and this is what brings you good health. And, you know, she's not like that.
Realign your chakras, and you shall be healed.
Yes, realign your chakras now.
And wash yourself down with ayahuasca twice daily.
If you are at all possible, you must come over here to New Delhi and bathe yourself in the filthy Ganges River. And then I shall give you acupuncture.
You know one of my dearest friends, Professor Kim Jots.
Yes.
I've actually
worked with him. He actually sent me some very homeopathic natural stuff that helped with my back last year.
He just won the award for the Holistic Medicine Award for Lifetime Achievement. He's the medical right hand, one should say, of Prince Charles.
Yes. And, now, that surprised me when I heard that he is Prince Charles of England, his personal homeopathic practitioner.
There is a very serious side to the holistic side of medicine. I'm very much, because of Kim and his insight and the way in which he's helped me over the years, I do take it on board. There are 100% total benefits to changing one's lifestyle, looking at minor lifestyle changes when you suffer from certain ailments like diabetes or
Take my wife, for instance. My wife, she is in the chat room tonight, Rainey. My wife, and she's made no bones about this in public on her Facebook. She talks to people about this. She has the Hashimoto's, which they're finding a lot of women have. And it greatly affects her thyroid and other aspects of her. And so she, too, is somebody who is looking into lots of ways to and I don't know what I know about Hashimoto's could fill a thimble. I know superficial things about it, but she does an awful lot of reading about it. But in all of these things, whether it's Hashimoto's, are there, and John, let me pose this question to you. I'm going to ask our guest tonight, but do any ailments we have go back to there is a chemical imbalance that needs to have some chemical applied to it? Or does every ailment we face have a way to be fixed or healed or treated by natural things? And she's going to be talking about this stuff that they do.
I think that the human body is the most diverse set of biological machinery on the planet. And it requires servicing. Now, to answer your question correctly, if there is a chemical imbalance, yes, chemicals need to be replaced to help and heal. But also, I'm a very 100% firm believer in diseases of the mind. And again, I refer to Kim on this one, Professor Kim Jobs, because he wrote the paper on this. Diseases of the mind, where one can take that chemical imbalance to the next level. And because one hasn't treated that imbalance, it becomes a state of mind and a state of awareness. And once that happens, I think the road to recovery is even that much more difficult, because you're actually not only dealing with the chemical imbalance within the body itself that requires that nutritional value, but you're also dealing with a state of mind which is also combating that chemical imbalance, is adding to it. So not only do you need to kind of service the body itself, but you have to service the mind. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
And I think you're absolutely right. And so this will be an interesting conversation with her.
That works, of course, people that can have their mind serviced. I mean, people like yourself that are dead from the neck upwards, it's very difficult.
Oh, that one stung so deeply. Jealousy is such an ugly thing.
Yes, I'm jealous of your colostomy bag, yes.
You are indeed.
So tell me more. I'd like to hear more about your cholesterol problem. How do you know you have a cholesterol problem?
Well, because they do all the blood tests on you.
What's the side effects?
I think the side effects of cholesterol, well, first of all, I think one of the primary contributors to having high cholesterol is eating improperly. It's the kind of stuff you imbibe. And it might be – now, I know that there are people like my former father-in-law was skinny as a rail his whole life. He ate very well, but he did this because he was always had a cholesterol problem, and it was affecting his heart eventually, and that's what eventually killed him. How do they – I'm not a doctor, so I don't know how they determine it. I know when they take my blood, they look for my A1C to see where my diabetes is and where my blood sugars are and all the stuff associated with that. And one of them, they look at your triglycerides, they look at your cholesterol, and my cholesterol is on the high side, my bad cholesterol. And
it has more to do with your lifestyle, with what you're eating.
I think exactly. Exactly. It has more to do with the lifestyle. I was just saying to somebody in the chat room while you were talking that every time I go to Egypt, when I'm there for 3 weeks to 4 weeks, I tend to drop 20-ish pounds, mostly because I'm not eating processed crap all the time, which is what we tend to do around here. And when we've got all these kids here at home, and it's so much easier sometimes to just have something processed in the freezer than to sit down and go, okay, today I'm going to cook. I'm going to cut vegetables. I'm going to brown meat. I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. And at times you're so harried, Rainey even more so than I, you're so harried by the time mealtime comes, we look at each other and go, okay, who's cooking? And dad is pizza. So
this is why we hired help. You know, we have butlers and chefs that do this for us.
Yes.
What do you mean, yes?
Yes, you have butlers and chefs that do that for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, we come home and we come home to the boat, and Abdullah is here, and he hands us our freshly squeezed and gyrated lemon juice. We sit down, we enjoy that, and then he rings the bell, and we all sit down to the table, and we have our wholesome meal of rice and pasta and chicken and bread and soup and vegetables, all freshly cut and freshly, pretty tended to by Abdullah and his wonderful hands. It's very nice.
Well, isn't that nice? You know, some of us have to cook for ourselves. I remember...
It's the poorer end of the market. I feel sorry.
Yes. Folks, there are times where I've been to John's in Egypt, and he'll yell, Abdullah! And Abdullah will come running, yes, John, what can I do? And he says, I need you to go down and pick up a chicken for tonight's dinner. And poof, there he goes. He runs out the door, runs for the marketplace in Luxor. So this all while, John has another Egyptian young man that's pedicuring his toenails. And putting a polish on them, and the other guy is dusting John's books up on a ladder behind him. So, John's got it rough in Egypt.
It's not
and you know what's funny? All of that for John's five indentured servants that he has working for him, it costs about the equivalent of $300 American a month. Go figure.
See, I don't have to take meds.
And you don't have to take meds.
But I must admit, and there are those who are out there who know this, because there was a huge conversation about this, especially at the Paradigm Symposium 2012. And I don't know if you remember this, but I do take a lot of vitamin supplements.
Yes.
Every morning I take a soluble multivitamin Everescent. I take a huge, massive red tablet that is jam-packed full of different vitamins and other little bits and pieces that you need. All by the way, I must say, holistic in its content, and organic. Then I take a baby aspirin for my blood, because also being a Westerner in Egypt, because of the heat, and I come from a more colder climate, my blood is that much thicker. And so it takes longer for me to cool down in the heat of the day. Not anymore, of course, because I take a baby aspirin, which thins my blood that somewhat and actually increases my body to the point where it can cool down quicker, because my blood is flowing that much quicker. Then I take it's called a dragon tablet. I don't know what it does exactly, but Maria said, take one of these, John. Take one of these daily. It'll make you feel better. And it does, actually. It's a herbal medicine, which Maria gets oodles of them. And so I take one of those. And then I take a couple of Baraka. Now, Baraka is actually mentioned. It's a black seed oil tablet. And I take just over, I think, 600 milligrams of that per day. And that's actually mentioned in the Quran. And the Quran mentions the black seed oil as the only thing that will cure all known illnesses except death.
Oh, so you can't. That's a nice disclaimer on the label. We will cure all illnesses save for death.
Death. So I just take them on a daily basis. But going back to the 2012 Paradigm Symposium, I don't know if you remember this, but do you ever remember seeing me eat?
Yes, at the Paradigm Symposium, absolutely. I remember the first year you were there, 2012, we would meet every morning in the bar and restaurant down there, and there was always a breakfast buffet. And your plate was loaded with bacon. Yes. I mean, you get like 20 strips of bacon, like 30 sausage links, pork, of course, and a couple of eggs to go with it. And we were like, are you going to eat all that? I said, is this a trick question, you would ask? And so, and you did. You'd consume that every morning. You were a bacon fanatic.
But did you see me eat anything else during the day?
Not much, no.
No.
It was coffee and cigarettes after a breakfast of bacon and sausage links.
And is my cholesterol level high? No. Do I suffer from diabetes? No. I am at the peak of physical fitness.
Now, do you
fitness.
Think any of this is genetic?
I actually do. I think a lot of it's genetic. My father is exactly the same, bless him. During the latter part of his life, during the latter part of his career, shall we say, his adult career, he was a continental lorry driver, and he wouldn't eat, he wouldn't stop and drink and all of that because they were on a time schedule. So there's a lot of genetics in it, but I go back to Kim's paper. It's a state of mind. It's diseases of the mind. I can't stress this enough, actually. I'm a real firm believer in that, because if I am feeling ill or feeling downtrodden, I get to the cause of it. And I think about it. I'm very aware of it. I do a lot of meditation, as you well know. And I get into my inner self. And I don't want to sound woo-hoo about that, but that's what I do. And so for me, it works. I'm not saying it's the cure for everybody, but for me, it works. And if I'm ill, I will look for the root cause. I will cut out certain things in my dietary. I will look at the nutritional values of things that I've been eating. And I will change my lifestyle somewhat to adjust to that ailment at that particular time. And 100 times out of 10, it always works. Always works.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, here's what we're going to do. We got to go out to break. But when we come back, let's pick this up. But our guest will tell you a little bit more about her when we get back is Robbie Hole. She's author, and this is what we're going to be talking about tonight, The Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, A Physicist's Journey with a Remote Australian Tribe. And then her follow-up book, which is coming out in April, is Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. And so we're going to talk to her about these books. Right now, you're listening to me, Scotty Robertson, my cohort, Dr. John Ward, here on the IPBN Talk, Alternative Talk. We're changing the name around a little bit, and so I stumble over it. Sorry, I thought I had it. It's the IPBN, Alternative Talk Network, and we're going to go out to break. So you folks, hang on. We're going to talk about medical stuff, but from a very different point of view. So hang on, and we'll be right back with what we think is going to be a pretty exciting show.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent Talk.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Hello, my name is Patrick Sullivan. I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about this special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. Now, what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, in 57's not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but it drinks smooth and easy. You may even find it refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Fast Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
When we make Beyond Natural dry dog and cat foods, we start with real meat as the first ingredient. We leave out corn, wheat, and soy. And we own where our dry food is made. 100%. Can other brands say all that? For nutrition you can trust and your pet will enjoy. Does your food go beyond? Learn more at PurinaBeyond.com.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to ScottAllenRoberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Sticking their fingers in the hole of the dike of humanity, Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Oh, God save the Queen. John, I cannot believe that you would not be standing on the deck of your Daha Bea right now.
I did have a little moment there because yesterday we laid to rest His Majesty, King Richard III.
Oh, yes, I heard about that, King Richard III. It's funny just how like you can lay to rest a king who's been dead for 1,000 years.
How dare you? King Richard III served his country impeccably, and we laid him to rest yesterday.
Did I say anything about how impeccably he served?
May God have mercy upon his soul.
May God have mercy upon his soul. That's my best Plantagenet accent I can come up with.
He was the last, and it's such a shame because, you know, I'm a royalist. I will never say anything against our queen and country at this present moment, but the Plantagenets, one has to say, yes. Oh, if only we were Plantagenets still. My God.
Well, you know,
two Americans would not have the United States of America. It would still be under our control. Well, you still are under our control, but, you know, it would be more publicly known.
Well, what? Your queen and her family come from reptilians, so there, we'll just leave it at that.
I can't believe you just said that.
Ask David Icke.
Oh, please. David Icke, he should be put in a straitjacket and put in a little room with no windows and padded floors and padded ceilings.
I actually think that's where he started. Now, there's probably healing for him out there. Now, folks, as we talked in the first half hour, moving on swiftly as we dig ourselves into a deeper hole, as we talked in the first half hour, we've got a guest on tonight that is going to bring a different perspective on healing, and it comes from her personal experience as a physicist. And she went off to Australia, where she met her husband, who had been doing some of this work already. And Robbie Holes is an international speaker. She's an intuitive consultant. She's the award-winning author of Memories, The Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. And coming up, I believe, is The Secrets of Aboriginal Awakening, or Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, if I've got the right year. I hope that didn't come out like last year. I think it's coming out this next month. And we're going to let her tell her story a little bit, but she traveled to Australia and spent some time with the Aboriginal tribes, and she's going to talk to us about Aboriginal healing, this inner healing that you can do. And Robbie, welcome to the show, first of all. How you doing?
Thank you. My pleasure.
And, you know, John and I were talking about this in the first half an hour, and we don't want to have anybody think, oh, we're going to talk about a medical show, because those, depending on what we're talking about, it can be pretty exciting stuff. And then you start to talk medicine, or you talk medical, or you talk health issues. And so John and I did what old guys like we tend to do. And that's so John, how's your liver today? Oh, it's pretty good. Hey, what's going on with your back, Scotty? Oh, you know how old guys get when they sit around each other and they talk about their ailments.
Excuse me. Why are you putting me in this camp with you? I'm not an old guy.
To a 14-year-old for an old guy.
I got to tell you,
when I was a teenager, anybody above 20 was old. So let's put it into perspective. So.
River Nile every day. I'm walking through the distance of Howard Desert every day. How dare you put me in your camp? I don't have medication. I'm not going to see a doctor. I don't wear a colostomy bag. Physical fitness.
Are you done? Are you done? All right. I'm just going to tell Robbie, you know, I was going to make a joke out of that until he just went on and on and on at great
defense. He's easily riled, apparently.
Oh, John is what you might call, he's very stiff upper lip British, but he's also tightly wound. Tightly wound.
The British actually do that very well, don't they?
They do. They do.
We do.
But he's also calm. He can be calm. I'm amazed at the calmness that he puts forward being so tightly wound. So anyway, let's move on from that. I was going to make a joke that said, you know, when we were young men, we sat around and talked about girls' cars and stuff like that. Now that we're older, we sit around and talk about, you know, whose colostomy bag is bigger. So, and I'm kidding. So, well, mine's bigger.
That's just sad. That is just sad.
Let's roll some dice on that one. So anyway, so John and I were talking about our various ailments. I came out of the diabetic closet, so to speak, on air tonight. Well, you know, I've got diabetes, and I struggle with it off and on. And just a few minutes before this show, my blood sugar went so low, which is odd for me, that I had to go take like a big scoop, a tablespoonful of peanut butter and put it in my mouth in order to feel like I was functional and not going to go to sleep. So, which is rare for me. And so we start talking about all these meds. And one of my big complaints to my doc, even a week ago, was damn it, doc, I'm only 54 years old and I'm on all these medications now. I said, this is just crazy. I said, can I not do things to get myself off of medications? I said, I don't want to be going into now, I'm only 54. I'm not elderly by any means. And I'm fairly active. You know, I think I'm in decent shape for being a fat guy in his 50s. What'd you say?
Active. I've seen more active pond life.
He couldn't help himself.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you aren't around when I take the walker around the block. We go all the way down to the railroad tracks and back.
It's literally 2 seconds
that's
away.
Really
you can
sweet,
see
sure.
the railway tracks from your garage.
Shh. It's a long walk. If you remember some of our earlier broadcasts, folks, the train whistle would always be heard during the broadcast. So, Robbie, let's get into what you do specifically, because I'd like to get some answers to some of those questions. And I know John would for some of the things that bug him and me aside. And so give us a little bit of your story. What, how did you get started in all of this, and what is it really all about, so people understand what you do?
Okay. Well, I mean, I, like a lot of people, I went into this kicking and screaming. I didn't want to have anything to do with this. But when I delivered my son 30 years ago, I ended up with a blood transfusion. It was a rough delivery. And that blood transfusion had hepatitis C. So I ended up with hepatitis C, and that almost killed me. And then the experimental treatment that they put me on, because back then they didn't even have a name for it, so they just called it non-A, non-B, so they sure as heck didn't have a cure if they didn't even have a name for it. So they put me on an experimental treatment, and that almost killed me. And it left me to the point where I could barely function. I couldn't finish a sentence. I didn't know what I was talking about. I couldn't get out of bed for 6 months, couldn't walk to the mailbox. And, you know, I had this little boy, and I wanted to survive. Even though Western medicine had no answers and nothing they could offer me, I was determined to find something to just at least survive so he would know who I was. So that kind of put me on this quest of finding answers to stay alive. And in the when I started looking, I discovered there's all kinds of answers out there. Just because Western medicine only has this certain knowledge at this time doesn't mean that there's not something available. So I ended up curing myself, healing the hepatitis C and the fibromyalgia that I developed. And I have been tested for every year by researchers for a long time, and they have agreed I haven't had it for at least 7 years.
Now, those are supposedly things that, that are incurable, are they not?
Correct. Correct. It's all certainly right. The hepatitis. Yeah. And now they recently, and isn't this interesting, because when I, 30 years ago, they said you will have this the rest of your life. And I, if I had believed that, I don't think I would have lived long. I think I would have, you know, probably succumbed after about 10 years. But they have since come out with some medication to help with hepatitis C. But I didn't have any of that. I healed myself. And so that's really kind of what got me on this path, is recognizing we're really powerful healers. Your body, you know, you cut yourself, you bruise, your body naturally heals itself. It just wants to do that. So you have to understand what's blocking that healing from happening. And sort of ended up segueing into the Aboriginal healing secrets, because my late husband, Gary, who was the physicist, although I would love to say I was a physicist, and we could go with that story if you wanted. It was really him.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, but the first version, the original version, is that Gary was this highly sought-after physicist, this brilliant inventor, but he had multiple sclerosis to the point where he was a quadriplegic for 7 years, and he had been given a death sentence by the doctors that he had about 2 years. He actually had about 6 months before he was going to pass, because things were starting to shut down. He wasn't moving. There was no movement going on. So he found out about the Aborigines, that the outback Australian Aborigines, the remote ones, have remarkable healing abilities. And and that's what the first book talks about, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, how he met a woman, a naturopath from Australia, who happened to know how to get a hold of one of the tribesmen. And when he contacted them, having just learned about them the night before, the tribesmen said, "Well, what took you so long? We've been waiting for 4 months." They're so tapped in, they're so tuned in, they knew he was coming. And they had already brought a woman who was part English, part Aboriginal, to come and to the village, this remote village, so that she could communicate to him and they could come up with metaphors so that he could understand, because they understood they were supposed to give their healing secrets to this man, that he would come to their village and he would be taking their healing secrets out into the world, because the world really needed it. We would call it God, divine source, whatever you want to call it. They call it the big guy. That's a genderless term for this, you know, force bigger than us. And the big guy had asked them to give their healing secrets to this man. It really sounds bizarre as I say it out loud, but it's really a true story.
Sure.
It's actually what happened. So he went into the outback in a wheelchair as a quadriplegic. Nobody would go with him. They thought it was just crazy.
Wow.
And they thought, if he can't go by himself, but he did. And he literally was unloaded from that plane as cargo when he got to Australia. And the book describes how he went into this outback and was with this tribe for about 10 days. And in that time, he regained feeling in his body, which he hadn't had in 7 years. And he clumsily walked on that airplane aisle on the way back, supporting himself with the plane seats. And they just totally transformed his life. Here he was, this scientist. It's black and white. It doesn't exist unless you can prove it to me. And now all of a sudden he understood there's a lot out there that's gray or that you can't understand or see, but it still exists nonetheless. So that transformed his life.
He went out into the outback alone. Now, do you mean alone? He wheeled his wheelchair out into the – oh, man.
Well, we probably need to clarify that for the listeners. There was one tribe. There were actually what you would call healers, two healers, who knew how to speak English or could communicate to him. And the person, Ray, is actually the name of the Aboriginal tribesman that he contacted, who had a phone. This Aboriginal person, he stayed with a remote village, but he also had an apartment, I think, in Australia, because his children were living in the city. So he kind of traversed both worlds. He had a foot in both worlds. And then they brought in this woman who was part Aboriginal, part English, to also come and stay during the time Gary was there. But the rest of the Aboriginals had not been outside. They had never seen a white person, as far as I know. They had never been exposed to any type of quote-unquote civilized culture. And I thought it was fascinating that the little boy, one of the little boys, just was fascinated by the wheels on Gary's chair, the wheelchair. That's just a typical boy, isn't it? We just have that in us, no matter what the culture.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, John has threatened to get me a walker to go when we're in Egypt. But, I couldn't imagine doing that in a wheelchair.
No,
yeah, so Ray picked him up from the airport and drove him, and the book describes it, drove him out into the desert for quite a while to get to this remote site where the village was, and then he spent 10 days with them. So the book describes his time with them, but I think what you really find out is that the Aborigines are so awake and enlightened. They're the oldest continuous culture on the planet, and they have never lost that connection to the planet or their ancestors. And their wisdom is astonishing. That's why they have these remarkable healing gifts, is they know how to use the power of the mind and access assistance from the other side of the veil. So they gave this healing to Gary because they said, we really don't understand how healing works in a civilized world. And we just kind of treat the body rather than recognize, and this is what you want to hear, there's always an emotional component, and that's the emotional core that you've got to uproot, or it's just like picking the top of the dam line and it's going to come back again.
Now, are you saying that illness, all illness has at its core an emotional core? That is the cause? That's the causality?
Yeah.
Like a cancer that hits somebody, or MS. When that hits somebody.
That's in the show, Scotty. Diseases of the mind.
Well, that's go ahead, Robbie, you tell us about that. Go ahead.
All right. Well, see, here's what the Aborigines will tell you. And they will tell you that you're a body, mind, and spirit. You can't separate those out. They're all intertwined, and they all play a part in that. And when the body, mind, and spirit are aligned and balanced, then wellness happens. But for instance, if you come in, and we see this, where children are born deaf or with autism or whatever, that's the soul, that's the spirit that wants that to happen. So that you can't, no matter what you do, it's probably not going to happen that you're going to be able to heal that, because that's the soul contract. I don't know if that's too far out for you guys.
We like to deal with the here and the now and an awful lot, but just ask John. We touch on the wild out there sometimes. So, but
I understand exactly where you're coming from there, Robbie. So don't worry. You're not too far out there yet.
It's almost like good cop, bad cop, you guys play. So if one doesn't, then the other agrees.
There you go. John will come on. He'll come on gangbusters and.
Yeah, think of it as
as the intelligent one of the duo, while Scotty kind of fumbles.
Well, good. I'm glad we've clarified that right off the bat, so I know what I'm dealing with here.
I don't get it, John. I don't get it. What are you talking about?
To you later.
All right.
Can I just finish one thing?
Please, please do.
You can say, even though I had a blood transfusion that gave me hepatitis C, if you were to look at the emotional core to hepatitis C, and there's a couple of fabulous books that will help you do that, Louise Hay's Heal Your Body and The Secret Language of Your Body by Ina Siegel. If you were to look at the emotional core, probable cores, either conscious or unconscious, for hepatitis C, I was a perfect case study. I was exactly everything that the hepatitis C would say. So it does play a part. And also, I know that that was part of my soul's journey, was to go have that and then learn how to heal it so that I could teach other people how to heal. I mean, I just have no doubt that that was part of my soul's journey. So,
now,
could I interject there,
Robert? Here in my village, which Scotty knows very well, in
Egypt,
the majority of the here in Egypt, one of the villages which I live in Gezira Bayrat, the majority of the gentlemen there who are aged 40 plus. You could say 95% of them have Hep C due to the non-interchangeable needles that were given during the early parts when they were in the school, because no one changed the needles. So when they were injecting one person, they were injecting everybody. And Hep C was passed around these schools like a common cold. How would you treat such a thing on such a large scale?
Well, that's a great question. Well, he is the smarter of the two, isn't he? That's amazing. That's great.
He just plays that on the radio. Don't let him fool you.
Well, I'm sure, Scotty, it's going to come right back at you again. So just give us enough time and we'll
see. All right. I'll try to think of something smart to say while you answer that.
Well, yeah, you let us know when you're ready. Here's what happened. I do a lot of consultations with people all over with all kinds of things. And I would help them understand what the emotional root is to that hepatitis C, because you've got to get that cleared up and healed. Otherwise, you can't totally heal something. Like I said, it'll come back again. It's really very simple. You'll love this, Scotty. It's very simple. It comes down to when you have certain type of emotions, they can be very toxic to the body. And again, there's no judgment about, you know, any of this. But if you have certain types of emotions like guilt, it's really hard on the body. And it creates a different kind of cell, and it creates a different kind of response in the body. And Dr. Emoto's water experiments and What's the Bleep did a fabulous job of showing that. And so when you have enough of those negative type of emotions, resentment, anger, guilt, shame, self-loathing, those are really low vibrational cells that you're creating. They're actually sticky and gunky. They slow down the chakras if you want to go out there and go that into that part. And so it's a perfect swampy breeding ground for disease. Now, if you go, it's like I said, it's very simple. It's either fear-based or it's love-based. If you were to create some love-based emotions like gratitude, forgiveness, those are love. That creates a different type of cell, as Dr. Emoto showed us. It's a very high vibrational cell. It's a high-functioning cell. It creates a different kind of response in the body, and disease can't sustain in that high vibrational state. So for someone who wants to heal hepatitis C, I would find out, talking to them, what are the emotional roots. And if you go back in history, any type of major pains, major challenges, major triggers that create this negative response, they need to become aware of that so they can stop creating more of those types of cells that are really hard on the body and start creating more of the healthier cells that are going to promote vibrant health. So that's a really powerful thing to do right there.
Now, that's very interesting, because Jim mentioned Dr. Kim Jobst. At the beginning of our show, we were talking to his friend over in Great Britain. And Kim was talking to me just about I had a break in my back 30 plus years ago, and I've got a severe sciatica that acts up off of that. Now, they told me it wouldn't affect me till I'm old. I guess I'm old now because it hit me last year. And he said to me something, and John, I mentioned this to you, and I didn't quite get it. And now I'm seeing the link into what you're saying, Robbie. He said something to me about, he said, your sciatica. He says, he says, there are some deep emotional things we're going to need to talk about that link to your sciatica. And I thought, oh, he's just being a little guru-y here for me. But now you're bringing up something, and I've heard all kinds of things about this, this whole connecting to the soul, connecting to the emotional core of who you are on different issues. But so now you are saying, and we already cleared this up, that you've already said this, that most wellness is connected to your emotional core. And now, how would a medical doctor respond to you on this? Because I've seen, the movies you talked about, the Down the Rabbit's Hole and all of these different things. And we know how we can build up these neural nets in our brain. But now you talked about cellular structure, that love versus hate. Well, let's just put the negatives, like hate, anger, frustration, fear. Those will build a negative kind of, you use the word gunky, kind of a cell. Whereas love, forgiveness, and all of the positives, those are going to undo that or build a healthier net. Now, is that a medical, has that been proven medically, or is it not that I'm looking for you to provide for me personally any kind of an answer to that, but is that something that can be medically proven, or is that, what is it? How do we know this?
Yes. And actually the beautiful part about this is that science is waking up to this. I mean, this is what the Aborigines have always known for at least 60,000 years. They've known that we hold emotions in ourselves, and that your body, a lot of us, our bodies are just crumbling under a lot of this heavy emotional stuff that we're holding on to, this toxic stuff. And science is discovering what the Aborigines have always known, and it's called psychoneuroimmunology. I mean, that's what Gary ended up doing. Is he came back from the outback, got a doctorate degree in immunology, and practiced psychoneuroimmunology because that's what the Aborigines had taught him. And they know, for instance, medical science has proven, if you have emotional stress for 15 minutes, your immune system is lowered for 24 hours. That's how connected the emotions are to the body. And that's what science is starting to wake up to. And there's all kinds of books that are coming out about that. There's all kinds of science now coming out about that. So that's what people are waking up to, is that you've got to get to that emotional core. I liken it to a dashboard on a car. And even though Dr. John's going to have his steering wheel on the wrong side of the car, it's still the same dashboard. You're going to have, if you got these emotions that are really hard and toxic to the body, again, not that there's anything wrong with them, but they do tend to have, you got to pay attention to it. If you're kind of marinating, for instance, in a lot of grief, we tend to hold that in our chest area, and that's going to create a problem in that chest area if you do that on a regular basis. And if you have breast cancer in your family, you really want to pay attention to the fact that you are not creating a lot of grief and not releasing it. That's the key, is releasing it. So I liken it to when you've got these fear-based emotions, because it's either love or fear, and you start creating a lot of them, it's like a dashboard on the car that's starting to blink. Now, if you keep creating them often enough, long enough, and you're not releasing them, now you got that dashboard lit up, and that may be called cancer. It may be called, fibromyalgia, any number of things. So it's what Western medicine tends to do, is to take that light bulb out from the dashboard and say it's fixed, whereas the Aborigines are like, you've got to go back to find out what's the emotional root to this, the emotional core, and get to that and release it, and come back to getting balanced again with more love-based emotions that are creating a different body, a different cell, and a different response to the body. Because you know, when you have something that's really, you can just feel your body start to tense up with stress. You can feel it contract. And it's hard for this energy, chi, prana, whatever you want to call it, it's hard for it to flow through, and it starts getting, it starts creating a blockage. It's a different energy can't get through. Things get these, like hatred, it's a dense cell. You cannot hold as much of the higher vibrational light in it, or whatever you want to call it. But it's awesome that science is waking up to this, and the new hospitals are starting to bring in more and more of teaching, so that it's much more rounded. To me, cancer is a messenger.
Okay.
You don't fight cancer. You recognize it's a messenger, just as any other. There's a reason that you have this stuff in your body. So that's what you have to be aware of, is that it's just simply telling you where you have the problem in your body, where the chakras aren't spinning, where they've just slowed down. And if you're an overachiever like me and you create fibromyalgia, that's throughout the entire system. And that's usually you've got a lot of anxiety, you've got a lot of fear throughout the entire body.
Well, let's do this. We are running just a little over on our break. I want to hit this hard and heavy when we come back, Robbie. This is very interesting. So let's do this. You're listening to Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward here on the Intrepid Radio program, right here on IPBN, Alternative Talk Radio. And we've got our guest, Robbie Holtz. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Hang on.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available, and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Hello, my name is Patrick Sullivan. I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about this special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. Now, what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, and 57 is not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but it drinks smooth and easy. You may even find it refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Bass Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
When we make Beyond Natural dry dog and cat foods, we start with real meat as the first ingredient. We leave out corn, wheat, and soy. And we own where our dry food is made. 100%. Can other brands say all that? For nutrition you can trust and your pet will enjoy. Does your food go beyond? Learn more at PurinaBeyond.com.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to ScottAllenRoberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, AllenRoberts.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad so he can take me to Disneyland.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
All right, folks, we are back here on the Intrepid Radio program. And, John, how is the Nile? Has the sun come up yet? It's now, what, 5:10 a.m. over there?
Actually, the view, I'm going to take a picture and post it up to Facebook, because the view at the moment is just absolutely breathtaking. It's that point where the night sky is hanging high, but the horizon has become this kind of very light crimson gray. And all the shadows are now playing around with each other, dancing off the mill pond, because the Nile is just like a mill pond at the moment. And it is absolutely breathtaking. There's a little bit of a breeze in the air, which is just coming off the Nile, which is a nice, cool breeze. That dampness is gone. All the mozzies are disappearing now. I can hear the birds waking up. And it's just absolutely, it's tranquil here. It's just absolutely beautiful. And it must be different as a contrast to you being in your little prefabricated studio thing.
Really? Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Have you shown yes. your crayons to take notes?
No, I have my chalkboard, though. Okay, so so that's what I'll do. And, you know, I've got to think, Robbie, that somebody like John, who is in the setting that he has just described, and he's doing what he loves to do in life. He's an archaeologist, and that's what they do. And yes, there are different stressors in life. There's always stress about money. There's always stress to cover the bills. There's stress to do this, stress to do that. But he is in a setting where he wakes up with that every day. And the stress might be, oh, I've got to finish this paper after I'm out on site for the next 8 hours. And so there are different kinds of stresses. But is that the kind of setting? I want you to do this. Tell us, you said during the break, you said, I'm being a little light with you so, you know, we don't go too far off into the deep end of things. And I invite you to go off into the deep end of things, because I've heard all of this kind of stuff before. And I personally have found, and John knows me too well and knows that I struggle with this, but I've seen up close and personal that whole spiritual side, if you will, the metaphysical side, the emotional side. There are things I've experienced that if I were to tell them to people, they would think I was full of BS. So I've experienced that side of things. Yet there's
No. I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't have that at all. I defend you. I would defend you, brother, to the last breath in my body.
I am sure you would. There have been times, and he jests now, but there have been times Or I've had people come up to my face and John is standing there ready to lurch into action because he could actually kill a man with his thoughts. So,
wow.
Anyway,
wow.
It's all training. It's all training. But seriously, there's
so humble. Really?
He's very humble. He won't admit it. So, there is a serious edge to this where I say, and John and I have talked about this a lot, and I think this is pertinent. And I want you to take as much time as you need now to answer this. But for somebody like me who has, in a sense, lost faith or abandoned faith, which tends to then spill over into almost every other area, when you're dealing with the metaphysical or with the spiritual side, even when you're faced with some of that stuff right in your face, you still try to find ways to logic your way through things, to reason your way through things. So what do you do with this? What does somebody do when they hear you say things like, this is what my past soul decided it was going to do in this life? And while on one hand I say, I get that. There's the other side of me. There's no way to qualify that. So when you say make statements like that, then talk about the deep emotional core and all the things we can connect with. John and Rocky are on this stuff. Me, I tend to analyze it too much.
Right.
Take it from there.
You know, and here's the beauty of the first book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. It's exactly that. You couldn't have had a more skeptical scientist on board. He was forced to go into that desert because it was the only option available to him. And he wanted to survive because he had a couple children. And so this is how you get a physicist who is about as scientifically geared as you're going to finding himself in his wheelchair going into the outback. And he was a very desperate man. So the whole time he's there, he's incredibly skeptical. And the book reflects that, which I think is why people have really resonated to it, because they're kind of feeling the same thing. But eventually, he comes to that realization, because all of a sudden, he's got feeling in his body, which he hasn't had in 7 years. And he's all of a sudden transformed in so many ways. He recognizes that having that really abusive childhood where his alcoholic father beat him, and he was so good with his brilliant mind at numbing himself emotionally, he ended up literally numbing his body as well. And the Aborigines helped him understand it's about forgiveness and letting that stuff go, because it's stored in your cells and it's creating problems. And he could see what happened when he did release it and let it go. Huge, huge transformation for that man.
Now, that's amazing to me that you said that within roughly, 10 days, he was getting feeling back. And by the end of that trip, he was walking with some assistance by holding onto the seats and saying down the airplane aisle.
Right.
And he hadn't done that in 7 years.
Right. I can't emphasize enough the transformation that happened to him. He was transformed in body, mind, spirit, every way. And he was on fire then. He understood what had happened. So he started writing that book, The Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, on the way back, on that plane ride back. And he came back, got a degree, a doctorate degree, so that he could use that to have the credentials to do what the Aborigines had taught him. And it's really pretty amazing stories, and that's what's in the second book, The Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, is when he comes back from the outback and discovers he's got these amazing gifts as a healer. I mean, it's mind-blowing. And I was there, and I experienced it and witnessed it myself. And I love that my sister got to come and live with me. Couldn't have been more conservative, and she came and lived with us for the first year because with the last year of Gary's with us, because we had so many people that were starting to find out about his healing gifts that people were literally driving their RVs across the United States and parking in our driveway wanting this man to help them. So it's huge. What I think may seem miraculous to some people is just lack of knowledge of what's really going on, and that a lot of the world does not have a problem with chakras or energy, you know, whether you call it chi or prana or whatever. This is known throughout all the cultures for many, many years. But the United States tends to have this, we're very Well, let's just say medicine is a business, and that we have been led to believe that we need pharmaceuticals, we need surgery. We really give our power away to the medical profession, and that's my passion, is to help people wake up to, you're a really powerful healer yourself. Your body wants to heal. It knows how to heal. And so take that power back. Just because somebody tells you, like the doctors told me, you can't heal hepatitis C, you're going to have to live like this the rest of your life. If I had bought that and believed it, I never would have been able to heal it. I knew that I could. I had to find a way. And it was that mind. Let me say this clearly. The mind is the biggest factor. That's what you're going to discover over and over. It's, if you don't think you're going to get better, chances are you won't. Now, people can say, well, how come they believed they could and they didn't? That's where it gets back into that. It's a body, mind, spirit. If your spirit, your soul is done, your journey is over, quite often these illnesses at the end are to help you let go and to help us let go. And so you can't think your way
well
out
said.
Of it.
Well said.
So
beautifully put.
So let me make sure I understand what you just said about that, about the letting go. So you're saying when people succumb to these illnesses, it's the soul trying to get them to let go of this life?
It can be. That's why you have to pay attention. Everybody's different. It can be that it's the soul's, like I said, some children are born that way very deliberately. I needed to have hepatitis C and the treatment. That was part of my soul's journey so that I could learn to heal it, so that I would help people learn how to heal themselves. Some people will have maybe cancer at the end of their life so that they will let go, because you don't let go of people very easily, and they don't let go of this life until you're in such extreme pain you want them to pass. So you have, but I want our listeners to hear this. Most of the time, we are not supposed to be getting sick. It's not part of our soul's journey. Most of the time, we are not. It's just that our, here in our society, especially here in the United States, we're marinating in so much toxic emotion. Our bodies are crumbling under the weight, and that's what we have to wake up to, and that's what we're starting to wake up to.
Robert, have you ever come across a reversal of what you're discussing here? And what I mean, and this is pertinent to, well, personal, I should say, to Scotty. When Scotty came, and I hope you don't mind me talking about this, Scotty, I'm sure you don't.
Not at all.
And even if you do, it's hard luck, really.
I love how he said, I'm sure you don't, before you even said yes.
You know it too well.
When Scotty came to Egypt, he there was this initial kind of release, and over the course of the three weeks that he was here, there was this, I wouldn't say it was gradual, it almost hit him like a steam train, and he became, there were certain ailments that came out, but other than that, he was actually perfectly healthy. It wasn't until his return back to the Matrix that these ailments kind of manifested themselves into such an extent. And Scotty, you can attest to this. You were out of it really for a whole part of a year.
Yeah, we're talking almost 2 years ago, my first visit over there. And I spent the better part of 2013 after that trip from March on just feeling like I was getting worse and worse and worse. Let's just look at it. I was a normal guy. I was doing normal things. I was, you know, mowing my lawn, going to the grocery store, running around, doing the stuff I had to do. But I was, these things that were ailments of mine were just mounting. And John knows, he was there. And some people who were close to me knew it was, I'm not a depressive type. I don't get, I don't have that kind of thing going on. But man, there were things that were just pulling me down. And John saw that all. And you're right. When I was, once I got back.
There was a reversal of that healing process. It was a healing process in itself. It was as if the body was kind of detoxing itself over that entire year. And it was a kind of, it was a very surreal experience to see Scotty on the other side of the ocean, so to speak, go through this metamorphosis.
it comes back to, if I'm understanding the situation correctly, it comes back to getting to that emotional core. Your body was starting to heal itself, and then you went back and you had not healed those emotional roots again. You go back to that, the fear base, the stress, the control. That is so hard on the body, and it's that stressor that creates these problems. And so you're going back to those same old mindsets again that have created the problem in the first place. Whereas I imagine that when you were gone, you didn't have that to the degree. I remember hearing I was taking the deposition of a doctor who was an oncologist, a cancer specialist, and he told me something that really stayed with me. He said, if you look back, now this is a medical doctor, an oncologist, he said, if you look back in the last year, 6 months or a year of somebody who has cancer, there has been a major sustained stressor every time. And I know that when I got that hepatitis, when it came out, because I had it for a number of years and I didn't even know I had it. It was just very quiet. But when I went through sustained stress for 4 months, that's when it sort of came out really big time. And it was like it came out of the basement. We couldn't get it back in again. It's that stress that brings this stuff up. The stress is a way, that's that blinking light on that dashboard. So you got to find out what's creating that stress in me, what's creating, a lot of us are just, here's the thing, there's so much going on unconsciously in the background. It's on autopilot. We just don't even realize how much control we're under, you know, how much fear, how much anxiety, how much guilt, if you've got my kind of upbringing, is just playing in the background. We're just so used to it. It's default mode for us. And so it takes almost an illness for you to start waking up to, oh, my gosh, there's a lot of negativity playing in the background, creating problems I wasn't even aware of until all of a sudden you've got that dashboard lit up all the time, creating diabetes or, you know, back pain or whatever. It's that. Does that make sense? You see what I'm saying?
It makes sense. I do.
It makes sense to me. With going back to that consciousness bit, the subconsciousness, and again, listeners have heard me, and Scotty's heard me talk about it, and Rocky's heard me talk about this. I termed the phrase the external consciousness.
Yeah.
That is separate from the biological form. Going back to that original question that I posed to you, how would you heal, for instance, a village en masse from hepatitis C without incurring, unfortunately, put it mildly, unfortunately, without going down that kind of that loving feeling, that Patch Adams type of.
It would seem to me that would be it's got to be an individual thing, doesn't it? You can't really talk corporately and say this whole village can be healed of these things.
No, but if you work on the external consciousness, which works and operates separately from the biological form. And as Robin quite rightly said, there are things that happen in the background that we are not aware of consciously because the subconscious, i.e. the external consciousness, which is separated from the biological form, can be affected. And therefore that in turn, through a symbiotic relationship, actually affects the biological form and hey presto, hopefully, inshallah, as we say, you'll be healed. Do you see any components in that, Robin?
You know, I do. And what you bring to mind is when Gary came back from the outback and he became a healer. I mean, he was a doctor, and you could call it psychoneuroimmunology, but honestly, he was a healer. And you would get the most compliant patient who did everything right. They ate right, they exercised, they did everything. They even had the right mental thinking. They meditated, they hung out in a lot of gratitude. And they may not have survived. They may have still succumbed to whatever the cancers. And that's the book, the second book talks about that. And then you'll get others who walk through the door who are just there because their skeptical mother-in-law insisted that they come, you know. I would never forget the story of this young newlywed. He had 4 brain tumors and he wasn't going to survive. And they decided, this young, beautiful, young 20-year-old couple, to get married anyway. Came to Gary, the mother-in-law now says, the new mother-in-law says, I want you to go see this man. And his tumor shrunk. and he was fine. How do you make that, how do you distinguish between those two, the totally compliant versus one who doesn't even believe in this stuff, and yet it works for him? Again, that comes back to the soul's point in this, you know. Is that part of the soul's journey? But I want to emphasize again, for most of us, we are supposed to get well. Most of us are supposed to be healed. You do have to pay attention to, I'm a big proponent of eating very healthy. I eat more plant-based, organic, fresh, local. Give that body as much of a chance as you can. I exercise. I meditate every day. I have learned that's just so important to get that mind just to just lift the needle, so to speak, for those of us old enough to remember those kind of things.
Yes.
Yeah. But the big factor, and there's a great book out by Dr. Lisa Rankin, I think it's called The Emotional Code, where she had this experiment where patients in Chicago that just didn't take care of themselves, and they, you know, they weren't eating right, and they were under a lot of stress, and then she went to San Francisco, and they, of course, they were all very sick, and then she went and started working in San Francisco, and they were eating organic, and they were exercising, and they were just as sick. And what they found was the emotional component. If you're hanging out in a lot of negativity, it's very hard on the body, and the body can't heal. Whereas if you're hanging out in a lot of these emotions that are generating a higher vibrational cell, that's key, of creating a vibrant cell, again, disease can't sustain in this high vibrational state. It's like the difference between a swamp and a really beautiful fast-flowing river that's just really healthy and vibrant.
How do you combat, Robbie, when there is a chemical imbalance, though? I don't want to mention names, but a certain listener at the moment suffers from, and I think Scott has already mentioned it, Hashimoto's. When you're dealing with chemical imbalance within the body, it's okay to go down the emotional route and so forth and look at those components.
Right.
But
right.
How would you then combat the chemical imbalance along with the emotional imbalance? For sure, I mean, there's the nutritional side of things, and looking at the way in which we eat and what we put into our body becomes us. There is that old adage. But how do you look at that chemical imbalance from a medical point of view and harmonize that with this kind of more holistic complementary health therapy?
Well, and I'm really glad that you asked that, because it is a complementary thing. You have to look at all of it. If you're to the point where you're in an acute state and you have to have pharmaceuticals or you have to have surgery, then that's what you need to do. By all means, do that. And if you have a chemical imbalance and you need to take something to take care of that, by all means, do it. But what is really important is to recognize that mind can greatly accelerate that healing, can sustain the healing. That's really important, so that you don't get the stuff back again and that it stays gone. That's what the Aborigines were trying to tell us, is that you guys are missing the mind factor in this. It's not just physical. And it's not always not just the soul's part. It's the mind part is what we were missing, and that was create. That's why we weren't able to heal as quickly, and sometimes not at all. And then when we did, we weren't sustaining it like Scotty exhibited that perfectly, because you've got to get that on board and balance. It keeps coming back. Isn't it interesting how balance keeps coming back into everyone?
It sure does. Sure does. Yeah. We've got some interesting questions on Alzheimer's that some people want to ask, but we've got to wait till after the bottom of the hour break. Can you stick with us for a few more minutes after the bottom of the hour?
You betcha.
Because we'll take you and abuse you all the way to the bitter end here. So
I love it.
All right, folks, you're listening to Robbie Holes and Dr. John Ward and me, Scotty Roberts, here on the Intrepid Radio Program. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Hang on.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
When we make Beyond Natural dry dog and cat foods, we start with real meat as the first ingredient. We leave out corn, wheat, and soy. And we own where our dry food is made. 100%. Can other brands say all that? for nutrition you can trust and your pet will enjoy. Does your food go beyond? Learn more at PurinaBeyond.com.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
I listen to Intrepid with Dr. John Ward and Scotty, transmitting cross all nations, talk radio with pure intelligence. Broadcasting to you live each Sunday from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern on Intrepid Paradigm Radio. Apu, bless you, John and Scotty.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
Here on the River Nile, and Sheikh Abu Haba Ahala has just announced that the annual fly fishing tournament has been cancelled. And instead, we have the annual Royal Regatta taking place on the banks of the River Nile here at Gebel El Silsila. And we can't wait to see these lovely flotilla floating down these tranquil waters.
Overladen, most of them with sugarcane.
Most probably.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut. I didn't even mean to break into your repartee there.
You did.
I heard the pause, and I didn't want dead air, and I went for it.
I took my usual pause.
Yeah. There's a lesson there about giving pauses there. Yes.
I guess. Well, in our chat room, as I alluded to just prior to the break, Robbie, somebody had asked me, would one of you please ask what Robbie's view is of Alzheimer's? Is it as it manifests in an individual, and perhaps why? And then she went on a few moments later and said, and ask her, when the individual's mind loses its ability to reason, does the spirit then fully take over? What are your thoughts on these?
Well, you know, there's a number of different emotional cores, and some of these could be conscious and some of them unconscious, and everybody's different. But typically with Alzheimer's, it's kind of it's a refusal to deal with the world as it is. It's kind of being overwhelmed by life, on some levels wanting to run away from it, not wanting to remember or be present, being lost and confused. So that's kind of some of the emotional components that might be playing part here. And I think that if I might, because I really love the opportunity to go out there, I think we need to remember that we are etheric spirits currently in a physical body. And this is a soul's game, that we're here to really grow and experience and learn. And you really grow here on this planet by experiencing these things. And that these opportunities, as they are chances to grow as a soul, to experience. And what a lot of us have problems with is we hang on to the pain. That's what the Aboriginal people have taught us, is that you guys really hang on to stuff. Whereas they understand something comes to you, it's an experience, you let it go with gratitude. It's definitely here for a reason. There's no accident. Everything has a reason to it. There's nothing random or no misfits. So these things come to us, whereas we here in the civilized tribes, especially in the United States, tend to hang on to stuff. I mean, how long do we hold on to this stuff until it really creates some problems? So that's something that I've really taken from the Aboriginals and really love them for that wisdom. But I wanted to bring in the fact that we are souls, these etheric spirits currently incarnated in a physical body, which is such a huge blessing. And I think that people tend to go back and forth, especially when they're passing. You know, I've had the honor of having a lovely gentleman, an elderly gentleman, who has been doing that the last week, and he just passed a few hours ago. But he was, you know, they tend to go back and forth into both worlds. It's a thin veil that really divides the two worlds. And with Alzheimer's, I think quite often they are sort of on the other side of that veil, if that makes sense to the listeners. I don't know if that answered your question.
Robbie, do you think there's a component here within complementary therapy that deals with what I would call the political correctness of the medical fraternity? And that is that complementary medicine allows its practitioners, such as yourself, to talking in a way and convey the message to the patient in such a manner in which it breaks the molds of conformity of political correctness, just like you just did, actually, and quite beautifully said as well with Alzheimer's, that there is a component there where the mind and the body have kind of given up, and there's a kind of hiding away, which is of course one of the main symptoms of Alzheimer's, where they're here in the present, in the here and now, in the physical, but in the mind and spirit, they're elsewhere. I love that metaphor there of going over into the different veil, backwards and forwards. Do you think that's a major component, though, of being able to convey the medical jargon, so to speak, in a way in which the normal person can actually understand, is breaking that mold of political correctness?
Wow, that was really impressive. I understand. That's really good.
He does that once in a while.
Yes, he does. He's very impressive. And I love the humble part about him. Yes, yes, yes. I would absolutely agree with that. And here's something that I think would be good for the listeners to hear. And this is important. You know, one of the beauty of the book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, the Aboriginals gave us their wisdom, their healing wisdom, so that they don't have to go to the outback to be healed, because you can't imagine how many people email me asking me for contacts to get back to the tribe. It's like, no, this is why they gave us this, because it's there, you have this, but you have to recognize the steps. And one of the steps, the fourth step out of the five, is empowerment. Take back your power. Don't let a disease or what someone believes to let you to just take away your power. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think you need to work with the doctors. Yes, listen to their advice. Follow what feels right intuitively to you. But if it doesn't feel right, pay attention to that. But more importantly, be responsible for your health. Don't just, I think sometimes here in the States, and it may, I wouldn't doubt that it happens in other places in the world as well, you hand over your insurance card or you hand over your money to the doctor and say, okay, now fix me, without any responsibility on their part.
Right, right.
You have to be very responsible and pay attention to what created this. How can we work together? I think Western medicine has a lot to help us with. I really think it would be fabulous if we all worked together, because we all have so much to offer each other. And hopefully we'll move in that direction.
See, well, I come out with some intelligent stuff now and again, you see, Scott.
You do.
I'm really blown away. Wow, that was amazing.
Every now and then he earns his keep. So No, no. By the way, did you notice? Are you hearing the birds in the background over there? You're listening to Egyptian birds on the Nile River, folks, singing in the background as the sun comes up in Egypt. So that's the ambiance. In the middle of the summer, we'll hear the crickets during the broadcast. And we had a producer about a year ago that said to us, "Hey, can you turn down the background noise?" And we said, no, we can't do that. It's crickets. So, well, now this stuff to me has all been, it's fascinating and it's eye opening. And it's, let's get to the practical side of how people can appropriate some of this. Now, I know you can't give away all the aboriginal secrets, if you will, quote unquote, to inner healing. But what is the first step that somebody can take to start getting there?
The first step is willingness. Are you willing to be well? Because sometimes there's a secondary gain. People don't—that's their identity, or they don't want to have to be responsible if they heal. It's easier for them to not be well. So you really have to, and are you willing to change? You don't need to know how, but are you willing to make some changes? That's the first step. It's a very important step.
Most definitely. Right. And that is a component of that political correctness, because we, most people within the West, they fall into this category of listening to their doctors, listening to their peers, and falling into that trap of, my uncle had that and he died eventually. But mm-hmm. Instead of breaking freedom of the mind is one of the huge components of this, I believe, personally. The freedom of the mind from religion, freedom of the mind from our peers, from our conformity within our culture. And I think breaking those molds, and I think you probably have seen this firsthand, Robbie, the Aborigines is one of the cultures I would love to immerse myself into, and I've never had the opportunity to do so. But They must have an absolute freedom out there, because they have no conformity to religion. They look to their ancestors for the answers. They look to their ancestors for advice. But they don't conform. There is this complete total freedom that they have. And that must be so elevating to a certain degree, especially with the mind, body, and spirit together.
Well, they have a lot to teach us. I mean, we may consider them primitive and we civilized tribes more advanced, but it's really, I think, the other way around in so many ways, especially when you get into this kind of area. They will tell you that we really don't use our subconscious mind to any degree. From the age of about 3 or 4, they start spending more than half of their time in dream time, which is huge. And what they're doing is they're going in and consciously creating the world. We could call that quantum physics. But they just know that's just dream time for them. And they spend more than half of their time actively creating the world. They'll tell you that those other worlds, those other dimensions that they're accessing in that dream time is much more real than this. They know this is an illusion. I think it's so fascinating as we are on the cusp of trying to survive as a species on this planet. We're having to go back to the wisdom of these indigenous cultures who have always stayed connected to the land. And the Aboriginal people have always maintained that connection. They've never lost that. They know that everything is one. They know everything is connected, that you can feel the rain coming because you are part of the rain. There is that intense connection. And that they know they're part of their ancestors, that their ancestors are part of them. They still have that connection. And I think it's so fascinating that so many of these other indigenous cultures around the world have those two main parts as well, that they are stayed connected to the land, and their ancestors are a very strong part of their existence.
You just reminded me of that scene from the film V for Vendetta, where she was locked up as the prisoner by the masked Avenger for all that time, and she was abused and tortured and so forth. And then he finally released her and took her to the roof, and it was raining, and the raindrops. And he said those words to her: "You are in the rain. You are the rain." And mm-hmm. the rain fell upon her face, and then she became this Avenger with the bomb and everything else, and blew up the Houses of Parliament and so forth. It's so true.
I wanted
they,
to ask
when
you.
When they need rain, they don't pray for rain. They just know they're out of alignment. So when I was when I went into the outback in 2008 and had the opportunity to be doing ceremony with Aboriginal women, we created. I didn't know this was going to happen, or I would have covered up my sleeping bag. We created these amazing thunderstorms that they hadn't seen in years. It just kept circling the camp. They know how to do that because they're very aligned with it. Yeah, that was quite an experience.
That's really interesting. Now, I wanted to ask you, too, about this whole thing of awakening. Your book, The Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, and I wanted to ask you this question because John and I, with a lot of our guests and a lot of the conversations we had of late, seem to filter back and forth around this idea of waking up or being awake. Now, is this what you're getting at, and is this what the Aboriginals, perhaps in that tribal setting, not fettered by the trappings of modern Western culture, things like that. But are you talking about this idea of waking up, of being awake? Is that one of those first steps, that awareness, that accepting that this is what I must do or what I must be or what I am?
Good question. Scotty, we're going to give you an equal praise for that one. That's awesome. Very good.
Woo-hoo! I am at John Ward status.
No, you're not.
Even surpassing. Well, you know, the Aboriginal people, they know that it's a limitless mind. They don't, like you've said, they don't have the limitations because they don't have dogma or culture telling you there's limitations. They don't have that, where we do. We don't realize how powerful, powerful, powerful creators we are. So what the second book is Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, and it's, I consider the remote, and this is all I've been talking about tonight, is the remote Aborigines, and not all of them. I haven't had experience with all of them, but they are awake. They recognize we are all one. They recognize what you do to others, you do to yourself. They recognize it's just different facets of the one, the oneness. They are so tuned in. Like I said, when they go into this dream time, what they're doing is they're unplugging from the mind and they're tapping into this grid, this greater consciousness. They're already there, and if we're going to survive as a species, we need to start waking up. We need to start moving into these higher vibrational states, and that means that you're in more love, you're in more peace, you're in more gratitude, and you're also aware that you're in more, and this is what, these are what these remote villages are doing. They're living in service to each other. They have deep, deep connection and gratitude to Mother Earth. They've never lost that deep, deep connection. I was listening the other night how Chief Seattle was saying how the river is, he treats it like his brother. I thought, wow, what a beautiful thing. They're like, how can you buy land? It's how can you buy warmth or the sky? They just, it's a different mentality, and we need to move back into that and connect back to awaken from these fearful minds that are continuing to take and take and create a lot of fear and a lot of problems. And that's what's happening around the planet, is we are waking up one by one.
There is a harmony to be had, though, between the trappings of the modern world and the freedom of the ancient one.
Yes, that balancing, yes, absolutely.
Well, I figure there has to be when you talk of balance, because not everybody can go give up a life like they live and live like John and Maria do over there in Egypt. There's a simpler way of doing things. There's right now on their dig site, they're not bothered by phone calls and by, well, I take that back. You get what I mean. I don't have to go into it. You know, you're sitting on the deck of a boat and that's where you live. Watching the sunrise and then set over the Sahara. I mean, it's a very different lifestyle. But how do you not everybody can extricate themselves from civilization. I look at the things we do in day-to-day life here. You know, there's children to raise. There's meals to cook. There's bills to pay. There's work to be done. There's grass to be mowed and oil to be changed. And so on and so on and so on. You live in the West just like I do. And so you've got all of those things. So I understand what you mean by balance, because you can't leave all that and go to an Aboriginal lifestyle?
No, and I'm so glad you asked another fabulous question we're going to put on the tally for Scotty. It's very good.
All right.
Even though you didn't really ask it, but that's okay. He said it. He brought up the opportunity. I love that you brought that up because you don't – what it entails, what this is about, is not letting that limit, that very limited, fear-based, restricted mind running rampant, unchecked. You start having an awareness and you're more mindful, you're more conscious. So you pay attention to what am I doing to the planet without just unintentionally, you know, buying water bottles and just disposing of them and the, you know, creating problems and putting things on the, you know, weed killer down that not consciously paying attention to, but that's going into a stream and it's creating problems in the water and it's creating, you know, there's and just driving and creating, there's so many things. Being more conscious in your day-to-day living, not identifying with the mind all the time that tells you that you are this or that you are that, and it's really not true at all. Not identifying or believing the stories between the ears, so to speak. That's a more awakened, mindful, conscious living, and that's going to take you up into a better place of this. You've always got this peace and bliss running through you, but most of us can't feel it because of all the heavy layers that our mind is constantly throwing over. It's like heavy blankets constantly being thrown over that. So you, that's why I love, you know, people, there's that thing, if you don't think you've got 10 minutes to meditate, then you need to go sit down for an hour and think about that. Getting that mind to stop every now and then and not letting it run constantly with this incessant chatter so that you can feel the internal guidance, you can feel that internal peace. The answers are going to come from within. There's so many things I could go on about, but that should give you enough of how you can. We're not asking you to go into this desert or live a simple, yes, live a more simplified life, but find it from inside and don't let that mind just be on autopilot driving you. Mine was like a slave driver. That's how I got into problems with mine. It was very critical, perfectionistic, fear-based, and that's what created the problem for me. I needed to become aware of it and switch to more loving. Really it comes down to, is this a loving thing to do? Period. It's that simple.
And you know, of course, it's you start talking in those terms, the loving and the embracing of things and the opening and the waking up. It to some people, they're going to say that sounds very hippie, you know, and they're not going to see that for the value that it really has. Just for the last few, we only have a few minutes left of this program, but for the last couple of minutes here, talk about what makes that, and now maybe this is the hardest question of them all, what makes that real?
What makes it real is the fact that this planet is at a point where we have got to start becoming more aware and thinking beyond our immediate needs and thinking, is this in the best interest of all? Is this a loving thing to do for myself? Is this a loving thing to do for my children or my grandchildren? Is this a loving thing to do to the planet? We are the wild card. We are, as we continue to wake up to greater levels of responsibility and love, it's going to save us. Otherwise, the direction we're going now, we are destroying the planet. We're fouling our nest. And that's why we need to wake up. And you may say that, well, that's a lot of hippie love talk, but that's really what it boils down to. Is that a loving thing to do for future generations, to destroy that water system? You know, or to be greedy. It's just waking up to what can this one person, that's what it boils down to, one person, what can I do to make a difference? And the best thing you can do is love yourself, and then it will ripple out, and that's beautiful energy to have rippling out off of you and to others. That may have been a little hippie-ish right there.
Well, that's all right. That's what I was looking for. Well, John, I didn't catch part of that. You broke up just a little bit. Your Egyptian transmission is a little.
You have to ripple more.
Oh, I have to ripple more. All right. Well, I think I could probably
ripple
do
good
that.
Stuff. Ripple the good stuff.
Ripple yeah. The good stuff. All right.
There's
well, let's. Let's ripple this because we've only got 4 minutes of the broadcast left. Actually, three. Why don't you tell people where they can get a hold of you and see more about you and find you on the internet?
Great. Well, my website, we put a lot of things up there to help people. That's our passion. And that's holzwellness.com. So it's H-O-L-Z, as in zebra, W-E-L-L-N-E-S-S.com. And there's a online healing course. I do private consultations. There's a lot of information on the blog section. There are those two books, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, which is tremendously helpful for people. And then there's Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, which is coming out in a couple weeks. So they can email me if they have questions or they need something answered. I'm here to help. And that's Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, at holzwellness.com. I'd be happy to help in whatever way I can.
All right. That's fantastic. Well, Robbie, thank you so much for being here with us. This has been a fascinating hour and a half with you. And we sure do appreciate your taking the time.
I really enjoyed it.
And let me just let people know that the new book coming out, it's in pre-order status, correct? The Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. And they can go to your website and they can actually find they can find your books there. Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, folks, and The Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. All right. That was Robbie Holds. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right.
Love the Egyptian weather report. That was fabulous.
On the Egyptian aviary report as well. So,
yeah.
Or is that ornithological report? Yes. All right, folks. Robbie, if you would hang on over there in the background. Rocky's going to take your mic down, but hang on. I'd like to talk to you a little bit after the end of the show, which is in about 1 minute. And so, John, that was a... That was fascinating, and that's the kind of stuff you and I have talked an awful lot about, and I love the way she explained things.
Something that you need to take more on board, brother.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're more than welcome. If you took more on board, you wouldn't have to take so many pills.
Well, maybe that's all. Oh, I'm not like a medicine chest or anything like that. I just have things that bother me.
You can get rid of the Zimmer frame. You get rid of your colostomy bag. Get rid of all those injections.
Would it take care of my walker? Would I not have to have the walker anymore?
I'm healed. I'm free. You could throw it away.
And John, and you could throw out your Viagra. Hey, that's fantastic. Just get in touch. Wake up, John. Wake up. All right, folks, we're going to be back on Thursday afternoon. And I always think Wednesday, 3 o'clock, 3 p.m. It's like 3, and Wednesday is the third day of the week. That's why I always do that. Thursday at 3 p.m., John and Rocky and I will be back here at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time for the Situation Room. You want to come and come with your iron undies on for that show. And then, of course, Rocky will be here Sunday night, next Sunday with EBN. And at 7:30 Central Standard Time, we'll follow him right at 9 o'clock with Intrepid Radio again. So it's been good having you here. John, say good night.
Good night. Watch the flames burn over and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees. And I see fire hollow in soul. I see fire. Did you remember me? Oh, should my people fold and surely I'll do the same. Confined in mountain holes, we got too close to the flame. Calling out, Father, us and we will watch the flames burn open on the mountainside. Desolate.
see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees. I see fire hollow and so. You remember me, and if